My name is Jack, and I am an addict. And I'm acting like I'm taking my watch off so I can tell what time I'm supposed to stop, but I just can't see it, so I don't. I mean, after a certain years, you just can't see as good as you used to. So I was going to ask John back there if he came with me when it gets time to stop, just wave at me, and then I'll. I'm so grateful to be here. I'll share this little story. About 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, Mike came down to see me. And I said, Mike, if something happens to me, I have these stepping stones in my front yard with the 12 steps on them. They're marble. And I said, you know, how about coming down and getting them and taking them to Fellowship Hall and put them out somewhere? And he said, sure, he'd do that. And about a week later, I had a massive heart attack. And so I'm really grateful to be here, just to tell you the truth.
And your steps are still home.
And my stepping stones are still home. I ain't giving them up till I leave here. But also, I share this with you because at that moment, nothing matters. At that moment in your life, when you know, you laid out there, you think about the people that you love, and you wonder if you've told them that. And I had the day before, and I try to do that on a regular basis. And I am scared to death, and I want y'all to know this. My expertise is not standing up here. But I was running around, and I was praying, and I was hoping the speaker would get here tonight. I was living in denial, and a guy came by and he said, "Do you remember me? I was at a certain place, and you used to come down there and bring the message of Narcotics Anonymous." And I said, "Absolutely, I remember you." And he said, "He's starting his life over today." And you know what? That is a, you know, and when I heard that, it was not so bad. I mean, you know, I'm still shaking pretty good, and I don't want to do nothing wrong, you know. And Mike said if I spilt water or peed in my pants, he would start laughing, so, you know, I don't want to do that. So, but I want to share some things with you that happened to me along this trip, because I drank profusely, and I done drugs horribly. And I wound up in a little place, and they had me in a straitjacket, strapped down to a bed. And the guy next to me, his name was Donald, and Donald is dead now. He died of his disease. He never could get. He wrestled with it for 12 or 13 years, and he just never could get whatever you get. And he just couldn't get a handle on it, and he died in a backseat of a car. It was cold, and I went down to get him, and he was dead. But old Donald was laying there yelling and screaming and kicking and telling me that horses were kicking him. And I looked, and the nurse came in there, and I said, you know, I don't belong here. I'm different than this fellow right here. You know, I did not realize I was drinking about a half a fifth a day. And all the beer I could get in me, and all the drugs I could get in me, but I was different than Donald. He was not in a straitjacket, and they didn't have him restrained, so I couldn't figure that out, you know. And he had his clothes, and I didn't have any. And, you know, I should have been smart. I couldn't figure it out. It befuddled me. But they sent us through this little thing, and we wound up in AA, and you know what? They sent me down there, and they had these little gowns, and I had a little gown on. I went on down there, and I was standing there, and I shared this. This guy walked in there, and he was the manager or the big shot at the mortgage company I had my mortgage with, and he was. You know, and I walked right up to him because I heard it. I'd been to a couple meetings down in the same place, and I heard you had to get a sponsor. So I asked him to be my sponsor, you know, because he could help me with my mortgage. He never did help me with my mortgage. I want y'all to know that. I had to work overtime and pay it all off. But he said, sure. And there's another legal thing. He was picking up the money at the end of the meeting. If I get away from this thing, shoo me back because I'll miss it. Because I don't usually talk in front of people but 20 or 30 or 40. But anyway, he was picking up the money, and I knew if I get in with him, I could get the money. Because I don't know, there's not a lot of difference between alcoholics and drug addicts except what y'all think. I mean, and that's just what I think. I mean, you know, I always thought I was better than old Donald, and you know what? He showed me the way. Even though if he didn't make it, he showed me what not to do, you know. But anyway, so he said, well, I'll help you, you know. You really need it. And I thought after the meeting I'd hit him because he told that in front of all the boys at the coffee pot. And they were drinking coffee and they were just laughing. And it'd been so long since I laughed. I don't know if you drank and used drugs like I did, but at the end it was a job. And I had to do it all day long, all night long, as hard as I could, and do whatever was necessary to get where I needed to be. So I didn't know how to laugh. And they were laughing. I thought they had acid in the coffee pot. That wasn't the truth, because it made me jitter. I didn't realize they had caffeine. But as soon as I knew it made me jitter, I wanted 10 cups. And he told me after a meeting, he said, you can't have but one cup of coffee and you can't go pee but one time. I couldn't understand that rule either. And he told me, and I share this with you, this is why I have a towel tonight, and I'm so grateful I brought one. I didn't know you had to wear a towel to speak, but he told me that I had to wear a tie every time I spoke, because I might be the only thing that somebody sees. And he said, put your hair back too. And I said, okay, I got it. But I share this with you, and he told me a lot of things. But I went to a meeting one night, and I'd been in the fellowship for about 6 months, and my wife had let me move back into the house, and my children were a year and a half, almost 2 years old, and my daughter was 6 or 7. And everything was going good. I prayed that God put us back together, and then a few years later, I prayed that He would separate us. No, not really, but she left anyway. I didn't have to pray for that. She just had enough of me. I didn't change. I didn't realize I needed to change anything because I thought everything was fine. But it wasn't fine. But anyway, so here I go to a meeting one night and I got all my stuff together. And I had a starched shirt on and I looked good. And I could see. I wasn't wrinkled up. And I got in there, and I was sitting there on the front row, and I was telling them about shooting dope and all the stuff, you know, that I used to do. And this old guy got up and turned around and looked at me and said, you know, we don't talk about that in AA, and you need to shut up. And so I said, well, okay. I'll kill him after the meeting. You know, I didn't know what to do but kill somebody or run him over the car or hit him in the head or something. I didn't know you could just say, you know, I'm sorry, I don't feel that way. But I couldn't figure that out then. I want to do something drastic. So after the meeting, I called my sponsor up. And I said, look, I think I'm going to go over and hit him in the mouth. Because I knew where he lived. I mean, I helped him, you know. And he laughed at me, and I said, well, they won't let me talk in AA anymore. He said, why don't you tell them how you feel? Because the feelings are the same. The ingestion of dope or alcohol may be different, the way you do it. But he said, in here, it's the same thing. It just won't get you quicker. And I walked back in there the next night with my chest poked out and I told him, well, I got my feelings hurt last night. And he said, well, good, you're going to get them hurt tonight too? He was one of these old hardcore fellas that just didn't, he did not understand me. He broke my heart. I mean, you know. I'm going to come back to him if I don't forget him. But, and then I was in the same meeting, same room, and I began to cuss. I mean, you know, all these cuss words that you hear a lot of people use in meetings, and they want to sound real. I mean, you know, I said, well, I got to keep my thing real here. Well, this little old lady stood up, and she turned around. And I'd already been hurt twice, and this was the third. My sponsor didn't help me on my mortgage, and this other guy told me I need to shut up. As smart as I am, I could have helped some of y'all, but I didn't know how. I couldn't help myself. And this old lady stood up, and she turned around. She said, you have the foulest mouth I ever heard. And then I was going to kill her later, but I just... So I called my sponsor up and told him the same thing she had said. He said, won't you just stop cussing? That was a real simple solution, but see, I didn't figure that out till I was ready to go over and do that. Because I knew about killing, and I knew about stealing and robbing. I knew all that, but I didn't know how to act in not doing drugs, not drinking. I didn't know how to handle all this stuff inside of me. And so I shut up. And this old lady about 6 months later said, look, let's go over to the mental hospital, and you're the one I want to go with. And she was old as my grandma and ugly as sin. I wanted to go with the pretty girl that sat next to me at the other meeting. I wanted to take her, but that wasn't the case. So here we go. I went with her for 10 years over that place. And you know what? When we stopped going, she was the most beautiful woman I ever met. Because, see, something in here changed. And that was the whole ticket. See, I didn't know that. I had no clue that beauty's on the inside, not on the outside. But I thought I knew it. I mean, I had my stuff going on. But anyway, you know, those things kept happening to me. But the reason, I'm going back to this one, the guy that told me that, not talk about dope and AA, and he was the most instrumental thing that could happen to us at that particular time. Because I went to my sponsor and I said, look, Les, I need to do something. And I was learning how to talk about my feelings over this period of time. Because I couldn't talk about dope. Because he'd tell me, he'd jump up and say, shut up. And I didn't like that real good. I was going to burn his house down at one time. It got so bad. I just couldn't figure out how to do it and not get caught. Because everybody knew I was going to do it. You know, because how you go around, you tell everybody what you're going to do. So then you can't do it. It's kind of like smoking. You go to a meeting one night and you say, look, I quit smoking. And ain't nobody in there going to give you a cigarette. It's a terrible thing. But anyway, I told my sponsor, I said, look, we're having a problem. You know, what do you think I ought to do? He said, well, there's a thing called Narcotics Anonymous. They say it started out in California. Why don't we write and get some literature? And this was an old alcoholic. He just called me a couple weeks ago and said he's going to come in September and wanted me to give him his medallion. And I told him I'd be tickled to death to. His wife just passed away. And he said I was the only thing he had. And you know what? It made me cry. Because I'm going to tell you what, I don't understand that. I guess he's then got so old he don't have anybody but a couple of people in his life. And you know what? I was at Duke, and I shared this, and it's not because I'm great or anything, but there was 100 people in the waiting room, and the nurse came in there, and she said, how many brothers and sisters you have? I said, I have 3. And she said, well, a lot of them people are telling me they're your brothers and sisters, and I don't want to tell them they lied, but they don't look like you. And in a moment of insanity, for whatever reason, I said, well, my mama was a rounder. And they sent every one of them back through there to see me. And I was so grateful. I'm grateful they came, but they had families and stuff, and so. But the real neat thing is that I don't understand, say, today. But one time I did understand because I stayed in a room all by myself. I hid out in there, and I couldn't come out. I didn't shave, didn't brush my teeth, didn't do nothing. And it was horrible. It was a horrible, horrible place. And because of the people and the fellowships, something happened. And I had a new what the guy said a minute ago, and he said it just perfectly. I started my life over today. And that's what I do every day. But I want to get back to this real quick because we started NA about 19 years ago, and I was about a year clean in Danville, and it flourished, and the rooms filled up, and they would unfill about as fast as they'd fill up. And I would run over, like we'd go to NA meeting over here, and I'd run over to the AA meeting because they had it going on over there. It was a bunch of people staying sober, and my sponsor was over there. And he told me that if I didn't persevere, it would die. Or we would die. So I just went over and stayed over there. And I came to both fellowships for a while, and I was okay. And the reason I'm telling you this story, because remember this old guy that I told you about that told me I couldn't talk about drugs in the meetings? Well, we got to be friends after I just stopped wanting to kill him. That was 4 or 5 years later. And I took him back to treatment a couple, three times after that because he couldn't stay sober. And his name was old Harrison, and Harrison was a good fellow. But one night after a meeting, and I happened to be there, he went home and blew his heart out. And I went over to Kitty's house and asked could I do anything, and Kitty said he just couldn't quit taking them daggone Valiums. And you know what? Something happened to me. I knew what was happening. I knew why he couldn't stand me. Because he was looking at himself. Not that I was like him, but he was looking at that monster still alive. Because it was alive in me for a couple, 3 years after I was here. I just didn't know what to do with it. And I just didn't drink, didn't use, and went to meetings, and somewhere in the middle, I'll share this with you, and I was going to, I was riding up Pine Forest Road. I done went and bought me a brand, you know, sometimes when you don't feel good, you buy you something brand new. I bought me a brand new truck, and I was riding up Pine Forest Road in Danville, and with $2,000 in my pocket, I was just going to go have lunch with my dope man. Now, what do you do with $2,000? I mean, who knows? I mean, you know. I was just going to say, what's up, man? Yeah. And, you know, and I've been praying this prayer, and I'm not a religious person. I have long hair and a ponytail and stuff that, you know, and I just, we wouldn't have. Me and God didn't hook up. And you know, when I was young, I was sitting on the back pew of the church, and they had altar call, and I was a Baptist, and I don't know why I was a Baptist, but my daddy said, come on, you go to Baptist church. So I was sitting on the back row, and they had altar call, and some guy ran up there, and the three guys on the back row, we all went with him. But now, I didn't get no calling or no holy row or whatever. You know, whatever happens, I didn't get none of that, but I played like it. I mean, yeah. So I figured everybody else was playing like it. So when they started talking about God up in here, I was kind of messed up. I mean, I was messed up before they started talking about God, but I really got messed up then. And I told my sponsor, I said, look, I just can't, I don't believe it. I don't believe in it. I've watched people die. I have killed people. I have done horrible, horrible things to these human beings on this earth, no matter if they were Vietnamese or no matter if they were whatever, you know. And he told me, he said, it's an action you take that's going to change your thinking, so you pray. And that was good enough for me. And so I started praying every day. The prayer, and I do that. I've done that this morning. The only time that I haven't done it is when I was in a hospital and they were putting stents in my heart. I couldn't get on my knees and they wouldn't let me get out of bed. But I share this with you. If they would have let me get out of bed, I'd have done it because I believe in it. I believe it works. I say these three prayers every day of my life. I say, God, keep me clean and sober today, for I'm a dope addict and an alcoholic of a caliber that I'm ashamed of. And I ask you to restore me to sanity, and I believe you can. And I make a decision to turn my life and my will over to you. And I get up and I say, amen. And I was going to pray for a whole bunch of other stuff, but my sponsor said, you can't do that. And I thought, why not? Everybody else got a bunch of stuff. I want a bunch of stuff too. Just didn't work that way because I was scared. I was scared to do that. I mean, I did exactly what he told me. And at night he said, get on your knees and you thank God for this day. And that's what I've done since October 17, 1984. And it's worked every day up to this point now. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It really impresses me, I'm going to tell you. I didn't think I could make it, but, you know, they told me I had a one-eyed black man for a counselor. His name was Bill W. And old Wild Bill, I am so talented and so smart, and I have so much on the ball that when I got into the treatment center and he looked at me and he said, you have to read the first five chapters of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, well, I ain't reading that book. I ain't going to do nothing you tell me. I really want you to let me out of here. And I'll tell the story in a minute. But old Bill said, well, you can't read, can you? And for the first time in my life, I looked at him and said, no, I can't read. And he taught me how to read. Now, this man that didn't know me, didn't have a clue who I was from Georgia Brown, took me by the hand and over the next few months taught me how to read. Now, I could read Dixie Jane Rudd. But if you're going to read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got to know a whole bunch of stuff in that thing. You know, they have a chapter 3 in there. If you ain't never read it, and I don't push this book, but if you know the first few pages of chapter 3, it's me. I have that I wanted to be like other people. I wanted to be normal, and I just never was. But anyway, going back to this thing, I was in my truck and I was riding up Piney Forest Road, and you know, I told you I'd been praying all this prayer, and I said, God help me, I'm in trouble here. And something moved into that truck. Now, you may think, yeah, this guy's dumb. This guy's a fruitcake up here. But something moved in there. And I knew that I'd never have to do this again unless I pick it up. I knew in my heart that what was happening to me was an absolute miracle. And I knew it was God. Now, if you ask me to describe him or to he just touched me. I mean, whatever it was, you could say, you can call it a higher power, you can call it whatever you want to call it, but whatever happened at that moment changed me. I even went over and hugged O'Harrison when I got back to the meeting. They had a 1 o'clock meeting. I went there and hugged him. By that time, I wasn't liking him real good at that point, but I wouldn't want to kill him either. But see, that's how God worked. Because see, he knew how I was. He knew I couldn't stand it. You know, I didn't want to be a holy roller, and I didn't want to be calling everybody saying, look, you know, I found him in my truck. That's where I found him. So I went to the meeting that night and I told my sponsor to get us a cup of coffee. He never got me a cup. That's the only time he ever got me a cup of coffee, long as we were together, and he went and got me a cup of coffee, and we sat there and talked for a minute, and it was good. He moved to California and left me all alone. Terrible thing to do. And I cried when he left. I don't know if y'all get attached to somebody. When they leave, you cry and you say goodbye and everything. But by that time, we had started NA, and we were doing great. And a guy named Wendell was running around down there, and we all was hanging out and doing good. And I would things started happening in my life. I started making money. I don't know if anybody's made money, but I've lost a lot of money, but I wanted to be rich. I really wanted to be filthy rich, have a Rolex, have a big house and a car, and I had this company, and it gave me all that, everything I ever dreamed of. And then I got handsome. I don't know if y'all get handsome here or not. You know, when you make all the money you could spend for the rest of your life, and I forgot that, you know, the thing that says, we humbly asked him to help us get through our shortcomings, and I forgot about the humility that I am powerless over my life. Because see, once I got all this stuff started rolling in, I could be the member of the country club, and I could drive a Porsche or whatever I wanted, or a new motorcycle or whatever. I forgot. I absolutely forgot who was supposed to be running my life. Now, even though I was saying this prayer that we talk about in here, and everything was going along great. I was doing great. And I went in to meet one night, and I got handsome for some reason. I saw her across the room. And I'm going to share this, and you may not agree with me, and I don't want to hurt nobody in your heart. But you know what? The only difference between me picking up that little thing across the room and having a wife and children at home and me picking up a load of dope is the monster I had to deal with the next morning. It's still the monster, but I ain't got no needle marks in my arm. That's the only difference, because I'm going to share this with you. That monster rose up and bit me. And it might not bite you, and I'm not telling anybody that this is the plan, but I'll tell you what. When she left me and took the kids and all the stuff and told me she hoped I'd died and all that stuff, that all that spiritual stuff that I had learned, you know, I didn't really realize it was real at that moment. See, I forgot. I got this thing inside of me that says, you have this monster ego here, you know, but you don't feel like you're worth anything. I don't know if y'all have that, but I got that. And so, but anyway, she took off, took the kids, hated my guts, and I paid her a bunch of money, and I used to go around and brag at that meetings how much money I was paying her, and it wasn't, nobody cared. I mean, it was just something I thought was cool. And it was sickening. But anyway, she divorced me. And everything that she got, she deserved. Because this woman had stayed with me and took care of me and through all the stuff. She came down to the hospital and spent days with me down there not long ago. And they had come in there and they said, you're a dope shooter, ain't you? And I said, well, how do you know? I mean, you know, all of them are clean, but I mean, you know, you can't hide them. I mean, if you ever shot dope, you know what I'm talking about. Or you know what? And I told her, sure, that's what I was. And Karen was there with me for some. And you know what? She is my best friend, because something happened when I came to the realization. Now, I'm going to tell you what. Pain was my greatest gift. And I'll share this in a minute. I know we're about right at time. I don't know what time we have to stop. Just kind of tell me. But pain, this pain that I had inflicted on myself, and this horrible loss of all the money, because she got all of it. I mean, you know, the judge does not look at a long-haired person like me and a woman with two children and think, hey, we're not going to give her nothing. We, you know, we we're going to hook her up. And they did. I mean, hey. So here I am. I done stuck up about 40 grand. And I'm going to share this little story. I stuck up 40 grand. I hid it so she wouldn't get it. I mean, I don't know why it was 40 grand. It could have been five. It wouldn't have mattered. So here I am. I'm at the meeting. I'm telling my sponsor, well, I got this little stash. Wrong. That's the wrong thing to do. If you ever tell your sponsor you got a little stash, you're in trouble. If he is worth a fart, you really are in trouble. So he looked at me and he said, well, when are you going to give her hand both? I said, you got to be kidding me. You know how I am. I mean, you know, look, you got to be crazy. So I wrestled with that for 2 or 3 days. He didn't talk to me much. I didn't talk to him much. You know how you do, you know how when you don't, when you're not talking to your sponsor because you don't want him to know what you're doing, or you don't want him to know that you ain't doing nothing, or so you just shut up. You know, go to a meeting and he's looking at you and you're just gritting your teeth. I'm okay, right on, yeah. Y'all know how that is. Well, anyway, here we are. I go to the meeting the next night. I went by her house that day and I said, look, Karen, I was trying to swindle you out of $20,000. Here it is in a bag. Do whatever you need to. If the children need something back, whatever you need to do, I'm good with it. And I was good with it. And I went on home and I don't know if it was because I was honest at that moment or because I give it back to her, but something happened between me and her. And she knew I had made a mistake and I had messed my life up. But the pain that I suffered and endured and didn't go out and do dope over was my greatest gift, because it brought me back to where I needed to be. It brought me back to that thing that I can't run my life. You know, anytime that I even tonight, we had come down here and about 5 minutes, Tim, I didn't put my towel. I said, look, you know, the gas going to come in any second. See, that's the way I am. I mean, you know, it's going to happen tonight. I mean, he's going to be here. And I'm still looking for him. And he ain't got here yet. And I'm on. But my two children, my son got busted in the parking lot at a meeting one night. See, he's coming right behind me. Bless his heart. And I went over and got him. And I thought he had been hit. So I came out of the meeting, ran across the street, and he's sitting over there like, yes, the police got him. You know how, you know the thing, you know, okay, I got it. I mean, you know. And I took him back on across the street, and he's sitting in the vestibule till the meeting was over with, and all our friends came walking out there. And somebody said, aren't you ashamed? I said, no, he did it. That was the truth. Ain't my fault. I mean, hey. He was a year old. He's 21. When I got clean. So he's never seen me do dope. But you know what? He's seen all the other stuff that happens to us. You know, the getting handsome, the, you know, not showing up when you're, you know, on visitation days, and, you know, going out and buying them something because you don't want to spend a couple hours with them because you're busy with Susie or Georgette or Rita or whoever. You know, pretty soon they didn't want to have nothing to do with me either. I'll tell you that story one of these days. That was not a good story either, but I share this with you. All these things were happening to me, and I didn't know what was going on. And what it was this God that I had prayed to that came into that car with me. He was working on me. He was allowing me to go through the pain. Not that you have to do the same thing I did, but I was one of these hard-headed, you know, people. It had to go that way. And God, for whatever reason, I didn't have to go that way. I just chose to go that way. I need to rephrase that, because you choose what you go do. And you don't have to do it. And my sponsor kept telling me, said, you don't have to go through all this pain. I said, oh, but it's great. It is fun. You know, I'm about to die. Everything in me is coming apart. Going to meeting, and they talking about spirituality and not lying. And you know, you've got to check out 15 minutes early here because you've got to go do something. That's stupid. But I didn't know it was stupid until after it was all over with. and I was all alone again. The same spot I was at when they took me out of those restraints. You know, and I share this with you. When I got on my knees, outside in the bathroom back there, I wasn't afraid you was going to see me. I didn't really think about you. All I wanted to do was say, look, God, I am absolutely in trouble. There's going to be 200 people, and they're looking for a dynamic speaker, and I am really in a shitter. And I don't. And please forget my vulgarity, but that's where I was at. And you know what? It was okay. And then I came up in here, and I want to share these two little things with you, because say, no matter how bad I mess up, God loves me. No matter how horrible my life, and I share this with you. I was sharing this. I had swam half a mile that morning, and I got out of the swim pool, and my girlfriend said, you look pale. And I said, I feel bad. And I'm going to lay right here on the deck for a minute. And I laid there, and I said, I think I'm going to get up and go in the house. And she said, you really look pale, and you're sweating. You know, maybe you ought to call somebody. And when I laid back down on that deck, I had thought about what my days, the 3 or 4 days before that, because I knew I was in trouble. Something that wasn't right. I knew in here, I run every 3 times a week. I swim all the time. But something wasn't right. And I thought about the people that I loved. A lot of you, a lot of people I have in my home group, and my children. And I thought about I told them I loved them. And my children were at my house the day before. And we had a big picnic. And I told them how much I loved them. And this is a funny thing. My ex-wife works for me in a company, one of the companies I own. I even told her I loved her. She freaked her out. We've been divorced for 10 years, 12 years, and it just freaked her out. But she's really good with that. And she loves me. And I tell you this. And I was thinking about the people that I loved. Not what I was going to do with all this money, or how could I do this, or what was happening, or the 10 houses I was supposed to close on next week, or the apartment building I was going to buy, or whatever. I wasn't thinking about none of that. I was thinking about the people that I said, look, I missed them. I wish I'd have called and told them I loved them. And you know what? I didn't have any of those people, because I told them all that I loved them. And I laid back there and I said, look, if it's time, let's go. I'm all right. Let's do it. Let's get on with this thing. You know what? You let me live a monster life. You've let me do things people only dream about doing. And it's because of this fellowship and people in it that have held on to me when I was not okay. And because this God of my understanding that loves me so much that he lets me go and hurt myself so I can get humble enough to say, look, I can't run this show. And John came down. I wanted to share this, and I want to thank John for coming with me. But the gift is not always the stuff. It is the pain. Because if I didn't have the pain, I would not be here. Thank you for letting me share.